Hi, everybody. I am showing up here to respond to a couple of really rich questions, one of which was asked by Danny on our Facebook page, and most of you have been able to see that. It's a very rich, long, and interesting question. If you haven't reviewed it yet, well, you know, I will make sure to post it and the whole thread of responses, because there's some very interesting conversation, particularly from Karen and, well, there will be more from Karen, but especially from Claudia and back and forth with Danny. And then there's a second question that was asked to me by Joris, which you haven't seen. I think I'll post both of these together with this recording so you can see the detail. And these are really serious questions by fellow revolutionaries who are intending to thoughtfully and thoroughly consider some of the nuanced implications of how to enact this in the building of communities. There's also another question that came through from Annika that's of a different nature, but I'd like to handle that on this session as well. So, Danny's question has to do with her intention to create a virtual community of women in Latin America, particularly women growing into one or another kind of leadership, and how she might apply the four quadrants model, which she learned. She's a trained integral coach through the Integral Coaching Canada system, which is also where I did my coach training. It's an excellent, very rigorous application of the five elements, quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types to the coaching of individuals. And it hinges on something that is a part of the book, the conversation about moving from a way of being to a new way of being, a current way to a new way. Now, this is something that we can do on a group level just by asking the question, as I did in the book and as we have done in the course, but it's also something that can be taken in a bigger way forward. It's not merely a metaphor that the processes of personal transformation can be applied on a collective level. It's actually how things work. In fact, this weekend, I spoke at the Global Purpose Summit. The whole premise of it is that individuals finding and incarnating their unique individual purpose, coming together, orchestrate a collective realization of our global purpose. So this is the premise, I think, of Danny's intended project. And it's entirely valid. And because she's had this deep training from Integral Coaching Canada, she's asking in a deeper way how to apply. And she's, in a way, presented to us some of her own inquiry and her process of evaluating. So she asks herself a series of questions in each of the quadrants. Questions about her own inner life, questions about what she needs to do, questions about how she can create the systemic dimensions of her project so that they're adequate to her intentions, and then how that implies relating to others and what kinds of relationships she wants to build with others. So all of that is really interesting, and I recommend you spend some time feeling into the questions she's asking herself, if nothing more, as a guide to your own inquiry about your own projects. This is a rich application of the Integral Coaching Canada system. It's exactly the kind of thing I hoped would begin to emerge from our conversations and our relationships in the context of this course. So I love that this has emerged. The only reason I didn't begin to try to respond to it or to Yoris's question during the course was the actual class session, was that I wanted it to be something that didn't get too theoretically abstract and the complexity and nuance of the theoretical distinctions that were being asked about, I thought might take us away from the immediacy of the emotional and feeling and intuitive and kind of existential confrontation that those chapters needed to focus on. But turning to this, by the way, I'm displaying all of this in a larger place so that I can read more, and I'll be looking off to the side like this as I consult the original questions. So what Danny says, my main question was, where do I start building a community or group, and how do I build it in a way that is sustainable and also scalable? So in truly integral perspective, I started to create what I called Dare to Lead with Feminine Intelligence, an integral roadmap to lead in a meaningful and fulfilling way. In other words, my own way to contribute to a new Republic of the Heart in Latin America. And then she goes through a very rich series of questions, which quite honestly, Danny, my impulse would be to engage you around the specific questions because they are really, really rich. But what she's coming to is, how does this online community look from the four perspectives? Now, quite honestly, there are a lot of details having to do with the specifics of the cultural contexts in Latin America that you're going to need to take into account. For instance, a group of friends and students in Mexico City translated my course on integral spiritual practice into Spanish and began to try to offer it. And that there was some real, these were passionate practitioners who really felt a certain evangelism about bringing it to others. But they were only able to have limited success because they found that online marketing didn't seem to work in Mexican and Latin American cultures in the way that it does in the English-speaking world, that people needed to know somebody who would recommend things to them. And then even to stay consistent in their engagement was hard in a virtual context. There was a tendency toward distractibility. The sense of real accountability in a virtual context was difficult to build. I think there are going to be other peculiarities to the cultural and attitudinal and habit energies that I'm probably not entirely sensitive to, that you're going to want to take into account in order to build this particular community as well as you possibly can. I think it's going to be important for you to in a sense, like I imagine that you would especially like to catalyze powerful leaders who are going to make a big difference in their cultures, and that you have some idea or assumptions about who these people are, what they're like, what they care about, what they're, meaning-making and attitudinal orientations are likely to be. And yet, you may attract a range of people somewhat different from that. And there may be people who will be important for you to work with as a way of you learning and you learning how to build community, who are not your ideal community members necessarily at first. Maybe they're not as sophisticated or influential, but they're open and they're willing. And through working with them, you know, and some of them will surprise you. They'll be far more capable than you had realized. So it's probably important for you to clarify what range of, you might say, we might just think of this as you have using the integral distinctions, you know, what levels of meaning making can you engage with? You might have hoped to engage primarily with exit green, you know, postmodern verging toward integral people, and you may discover that quite a few just open-minded orange, and even, you know, with a lot of traditional values, how deeply will the traditional cultures of Latin America be an influence on people? How will you have to modify the way you speak to them in order to address the whole person? Because you're not only trying to get them to sign up for your course when you first make the offer, you're really trying to get them to understand it in a way that will allow them to choose it in an authentic enough way that they'll be able to sustain their commitment to participate and deepen in the process. And you're going to have to consider from your own, you know, part of the systemic thing will be, this will take a fair amount of time. And I gather that it's a mission calling for you and a labor of love. It may be that you can do this in a way that will enable it to pay for itself and for it to make sense for you from a business perspective. You can earn your living doing all the work you're doing, going to have to do to build this community. It may also be, though, that because it is something you're passionate about, you may have to invest for a while. You may have to compromise and work at a less profitable level initially in order to generously prime the pump, in order to learn how to build such a community, in order to learn how to do it in a way that will really, really work and have legs and be a sustainable cultural influence in Latin America. I think the questions that Claudia posed, which are quite extensive actually in her comments here, let me take a look at them. A great deal of what you addressed, Claudia, had to do with kind of the soul level of this, you know, the roles of the speaking from the heart to the unknown, the mystery of existence, prayer, gratitude, deep listening, you know, This is the paradox. I mean, we're all in this, but part of what we're doing is we're using very sophisticated systems like the integral model to understand a very multidimensional complex reality and to address it with more specificity. And we don't want to just be drawn into a third person subject object abstract mentality relationship to things. We're trying to grow beyond that fixation of attention in the mental plane and show up in a real way with one another. And this is really lit up by Claudia got your depth, Danny, in asking these questions from a very real place and using your discernment and your skill and training, which then she's kind of, I don't think challenging, but just joining with you and then bringing in these more soulful dimensions. And then she says also, she's curious about exploring the circles of next stage organizations that she's swimming in right now, and the purpose focus, the energizer for the organization to continue and deliver. And she makes the comment, rather than look for big purpose and then try to find people who are lining up, I rather say, these are people I have real love and trust with and high energy with. I want to create things with you, and I almost don't care what they are. I don't even care what their big purpose is, because we're having such a great time and we're going for it, and it's as meaningful as this connection is, and I'm willing to go for it. And there's something there I want to keep following. Well, these are very rich. This is in the trenches of the passionate individual engaged. So as we get into the slicing and dicing of understanding all the different dimensions of what we're doing, we we have to restore, and this is what Claudia's discourse, which Danny very intelligently and gracefully is taking on board and making use of. This is a high-level discourse, actually. It's exactly what I'm wanting us to be doing, and I encourage anyone else who's interested in building a community to reflect on this. It's tricky. There's only so much we can do in a forum like a Facebook group, so that's not the be-all and the end-all. But it may be that a small working group of people who are intending to build communities can emerge out of this. What I'm seeing in Claudia's questions and kind of in a way, we answer these questions in a mental way. We create a system. We have a kind of a hypothesis about how to do the work. And then real people show up. And the real challenges of making the whole thing work present themselves in ways that surprise us. So the process of applying any system, including integral theory, which is where I've done most of my work, is paradoxical. Because to some degree, we have to hold to like the Integral Coaching Canada method if we really want to get the benefits of it. But then we kind of have to set it aside because the map is not the territory. So having used this map to see into all kinds of rich issues, we then have to pull back from the map, but really plunge in to the territory, which are the human beings. The actual connection. The only reason for doing a project like this is to activate, you know, what I call a new republic of the heart, to activate another conscious node in this network whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere, to bring that alive. And all these deep questions that we ask are ways of bringing our mind into the nuance of things, but then what has to show up in relationship to the nuance of those things is our whole incarnate being. And part of our whole incarnate being includes not just our feelings and our intuition, but also our history and our trauma and our genius and our relationships with one another. It has so many different dimensions. So there's no, the problem with the theory is that it tends to suggest that there are formula that we can follow. And in a way, there are formulas that we can fruitfully follow in order to do a rigorous multidimensional analysis or assessment or planning process, but then our relationship between these models and our application has to continue to be fluid and alive. And these use different faculties. And when you're engaged in a consideration, it builds a certain momentum. So when we're doing this abstraction, it tends to draw us into staying in abstraction. And when we're doing something soulful, it tends to draw us into a feeling kind of a state where it's not like, so it's not intuitively immediately magnetic for us to go abstract and look at the multiple perspectives. But each of these modes of being and others have values. You know, roughly speaking, there's the higher mind, the psychic intuitive capacities. There's the feeling, there's the analytical mentality, there's the feeling, emotional knowings, and there's this kind of gut level, street savvy that's grounded and understands power and security and self-preservation and status and influence. And all of those have to be given room to show up in the domains that our analysis highlights and brings forward for us. So, Danny, I think your question, although you did ask, you asked a whole host of questions. You asked whatever, close to 35 questions in each of the quadrants, would be worth engaging around if we were doing an in-depth coaching process or mentoring process, really. I'm not going to try to get into all that with you here. I think part of what you were really doing was showing leadership in this community to other community builders by revealing your process in a way that I think is helpful. And Claudia picked that up. I think Karen is picking it up. And I encourage Joris, you might find this useful too. But then Joris asked a different question, and also a very fruitful one. So let me go to that. Just a moment. And he offers a kind of a background. He's starting communities of practice for specialists to work together to advance their practice, personal and professional, conscious lawyers or doctors or judges. You could see it as an in-town monastery or sangha, in some ways like a rotary, and in some ways a training, peer-to-peer coaching group. In short, a group, a form of a we tribe organized around professions for working within, against, and around the system, because the group work locally or regionally if they meet or coach on and off offline, and then they work or do projects online and in the community offline. So he's running into some dilemmas, and he asked the question, considering that people need to practice and learn, and that this needs both sameness and a safe space, not too much worldview conflict, and a level of sameness so you can grow together. Reading about the walled garden and working with like-minded people and values and guidelines to make actual practice possible instead of just talk. How do you deal with different levels of maturity in inviting people, keeping it together, or in some cases, parting people, I think, excluding people, choosing not to include people? Can you combine two worldviews in a group or stick to one group at the one level of thought, ecologist, or the level of maturation, like green? Do I need different offerings or different sanghas for a different appeal to the three main groups? How do people grow in a community of practice and keep the right level of diversity and sameness to make it effective? Well, those are really rich questions, and I think I'm learning about them myself. I don't think there are cut and dried answers to it. I like that you're asking the question. That's important. I suspect that as you get into it, you're going to have to make intuitive judgment calls based on the individuals. I suggest that you begin this process by inviting people to whatever degree you know these people or you know others who know these people. I suggest you begin with relatively small gatherings where you can get to know them. I'm not sure that an application process is practical in this environment, but the ideal thing would be to invite people based on knowing that they do have some measure of adequacy. One of his other background questions had to do with noting the definitions of adequacy for we space that are outlined in the book. So, I think you're going to find that there do tend to be certain tendencies toward patterns of orientation that can conflict. You're going to find that there may be individuals, particularly, I think you're in, trying to remember whether it's Norway or Sweden. I think you're in one of the Nordic countries. And, there's a pretty strong modernist, atheistic bias with quite a bit of green values, but not spiritual ones, and certain amount of environmental consciousness likely to be available. So the potential to find a critical mass of judges or doctors who have enough of a measure of adequacy to participate seems, you know, I imagine that this, you know, this seems like a grounded practical project to me. I think what you're intending could work. And yet I do think the potential, it's tricky, you see, because if you really want to go deep, you're going to get to the place where the differences, not just in worldviews, but they're going to be typological and attitudinal distinctions that might tend to create conflict. And so I think one of the biggest things that you're going to probably need to do in that context, that, you know, Nordic people are ascended. They're more developed than what in yogic terms is called the upper coil, the higher functions. But they're not as sunk into the feeling, relational, human, incarnate dimension, you know, the kind of thing accessed through earth spirituality and ritual and, you know, drumming and shamanic work and so forth. And community actually gets created with more of those elements being included. You don't want to do that in a radical way. You're going to want to bring that in a way that feels organic and real. So I suspect that you're going to want to make your discernments less on the basis of, are the attitudes more green or orange, to how open-minded, how epistemically humble, how willing to have an experience that will really touch them at a deep level, how available people are. And I think assessing that and getting together people who have real availability, you may be able to build bonds among the participants that will be profoundly meaningful to everyone involved. And I think that that's a discernment that can be informed by the integral distinctions, but it can't be narrowly guided by them. Don't just, you know, like back in the days when I was mainly teaching integral theory, I would point out that the organic expression of life is nonlinear. And then we notice, things at this height or this height have these different characteristics. But if we use the metaphor of looking at a tree, trees are just growing in all kinds of different organic directions. They don't grow, you know, along the grid of verticality and out the grids of horizontality. And so don't let the model obscure your view of the territory. Again, that same principle I spoke to when responding to Danny's question. So I think the most critical thing is going to be really on the ground in relationship, also partly knowing yourself. And this actually applies to you too, Danny. Knowing our own place of genius and authority, the place where we have an ability to be persuasive and to command some influence, and not overstepping it. And in other words, valuing and honoring your own leadership and your own capacity, but then being very humble and not imagining that you are able to do more than you can, then you're going to orient in a way where you're going to genuinely give gifts to people. You're going to stay true. And whatever the, you know, imagine this is also for you a business undertaking, you'll have satisfied customers. You'll build goodwill. What you're doing will, you'll strike onto some things that will work and then can replicate, and it will grow. It will become a really successful offering. So I think those are the best things I can say right now in the abstract. Obviously, if we were in another context, we could have a rich and deepening conversation about what my responses bring up in you. But we're working in the form of this course, and this seems like what I can say at this moment. Now, there's another question I wanted to respond to from Annika, which is on a different topic altogether. She was appreciating the teaching on don't know mind and was attempting to live from a don't know mind, but was also coming in touch with her own deep patterning, which leaves her really wanting certainty, wanting to be certain about situations, relationships, what steps to take in her day or her life in general. And she's done enough counseling over many years to understand where this need for certainty comes from, and how that constrains her ability to let go of preconceived ideas. And she's appreciating that there is no certainty, but to just be ungrounded is difficult. Like her desire for certainty is a desire for ground. I'm commenting on this. So she asks me, should I work to resolve my need for certainty first by itself before continuing to try to live from a don't know space? Or might these two approaches or modes of being have a common thread that I don't see? I'm wondering, what do you see as my best, most effective way to address this conflict between them? Well, you know, Annika, I'm really arguing, when I talk about don't know mind, I often talk about beginner's mind. And in beginner's mind, we're knowing that we don't know, and therefore there's the sense of wonder. You know, like there have been moments in your life, maybe with a plant medicine or just an innocent moment. Many of us have had them just spontaneously with that, or just after meditation, you know, this often spontaneously happens. You see something and you're really here and you're really present and you're really seeing it as it is, not through the filter. You're not looking at it and going, oh, tree. I know a lot about trees and they look sort of like that. And this one looks a little like the wind is moving it, or gee, it might be a little sick in some place. And gee, it's healthy, beautiful specimen, or gee, that's a squat shape, you know, whatever. You're knowing about it, but the thing itself just stands forth. And the fact that all the knowledge about it is all secondary, and the reality of the thing itself stands forth. You don't know it. It is a mystery. It is just its isness. You're alive to that. And you can have knowledge about it, but the don't know mind is about getting past the knowledge functioning as a screen, where instead of seeing the thing itself authentically, what you're seeing is your ideas about it. And the filter is what people live in the consensus trance most of the time. So I think that you need to have a great deal of self-compassion. Your need for grounding, for having some measure, like certainty is never perfect, but some measure of, you know, I've decided for the time being to stay living in this house, in this town, and so that's my ground. And I've decided to move. It doesn't have to be one or the other, but some clarity about your life choices and commitments and needs and capacities, and therefore a basis then for making choices about what you prioritize in your daily activities and how you order your day and your practice. All of that's really important. That's all very rich. And so I want to encourage you not to think of this as an either or. I don't think that the don't know mind and this need for certainty need to be arrayed as a single, as a zero sum. They're not on a single axis. I think don't know mind has to do with the innocence of seeing things freshly apart from any kind of preconceived knowledge and being open and willing to learn and epistemically humble, knowing, you know, that you don't, your knowledge is always incomplete and provisional and more will reveal itself. That way of relating is fresh and alive, and I hope you'll continue to discover it and cultivate it, particularly in your meditation. As far as your sense of an anxiety and a desire for some kind of ground of certainty, some that ground of clarity, I think establishing greater clarity is just being sensitive to your own self needs. And I encourage you to attempt to get better certainty and when you're noticing that you do have this need, and also to appreciate that, you know, there is no ultimate certainty. We're always dealing with such profound uncertainty, particularly in our world today. And so if you can find your way into this in a way where you grow in your self-compassion and your ability to really know your needs and take care of them, and in your ability to inquire into a freer or more open, more spacious relationship to every moment of experience in this don't know mind. I think these are both possible simultaneously. Okay, everybody, thank you. Those are my answers to these questions. I hope this has been really useful to you, and I look forward to being with you again. It's before American Thanksgiving right now as I record this. I hope you will have or are having or have had a great Thanksgiving if you're in the U.S. And happy November to everybody. I look forward to seeing you in the last session in about a week and a half from now. Thank you.